Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the first meeting of the Conference Committee on Transportation for this year. We're glad to have you all here. We're going to start today with introductions. We'll limit it to the people who are at the table, but everyone who's at the table, I would like to introduce themselves. And Jonathan, you're first.
Jonathan Fortner, GOP Research.
Linda Rumbeck, District 38A.
John Kosnick, 58A from Lakeville. And Mr. Chair, if I could.
Go ahead, Representative Kosnick. You're going to try and take credit for something, I would guess.
Well, I'm happy to be here on the first conference committee. And in the House, we have the tradition of your first committee, you bring treats. So hopefully everybody got a little bit of jelly beans, and look forward to working on the committee.
Mr. Chair, bribery is illegal in Bushwood, isn't it?
Well, you got to try them first. Representative Howe.
Jeff Howe, SD 13A from Rockville.
And I just before we go on, the sound system in this room is highly suspect as to its efficiency and quality, so I would suggest leaning into the mics and speaking clearly and loudly, otherwise no one will hear you.
Matt Burris with Nonpartisan House Research.
John Petersburg, District 24A.
Chelsea Peter, Committee Legislative Assistant.
Joe Marble, Committee Administrator for the House.
Paul Torkelson, State Representative.
Scott Nolan, State Senator.
David Larson, Committee Administrator.
Evan Nelson, Committee Legislative Assistant.
Lexi Stangle, Senate Counsel for Transportation.
Senator Dave Osmek, District 33.
Senator John Jasinski, State Senator, District 24.
Mary Kiffmeyer, State Senator, District 30.
State Senator Dan Sparks.
Charlie Bruce, DFL Research.
Peter Mavis, GOP Research.
And at the testifiers table.
Okay. I'm Krista Boyd. I'm Fiscal Analyst for the Senate Transportation Committee.
Andrew Lee, House Fiscal Staff.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. And we are going to start today with a walkthrough of the spreadsheet. And that should be tabbed in your folders. I believe it's the second section, at least in the House books. And we have a side-by-side of the base, the governor's recs, the House bill, and the Senate bill. Mr. Lee, are you going to take the lead? Mr. Lee, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, starting off of the spreadsheet, I will be walking through the change items. Those are highlighted in italics. The first change item on line 10 is the appropriations increase for aeronautics. On the House side, that is a $2 million increase over base over the biennium. On the Senate side, that's a $6 million increase over the biennium. Then there's a number of provisions that are the same on the House and the Senate side, or nearly the same. The Rochester Airport Terminal on the House side at $2,333,000, and on the Senate side, that's in for $2,334,000. Then moving on, the Duluth Airport Runway at $6.6 million, and that's identical on both the House and Senate. Also the same is a study for the St. Cloud Airport. Then on the House-only side, there is a $3 million appropriation of the Aeronautics Fund for International Falls Airport Terminal and a $320,000 appropriation for the Carlton County Airport Hangar. Moving on, there is a House-only item on aeronautics support and services that takes what has been in the past a rider for the Civil Air Patrol and makes it its own base, and you can see that down on line 35 of the spreadsheet. That's $80,000 a year. In addition to that, there is a one-time appropriation for the Civil Air Patrol facility in St. Paul for $3.5 million on the House side only. Moving on to transit, there is, on line 47, you can see statutory note. This does not add to the totals, but it's just noted here. Currently, the allocation of the motor vehicle lease sales tax is distributed with the first $32 million going to the general fund, and then everything in above that going 50-50 between Greater Minnesota Transit and five of the seven metropolitan counties. This is the amount for the transit, and this is the base amount. And so what's happening here on the House side is that amount is no longer going to Greater Minnesota Transit as a direct or as a statutory appropriation off of the motor vehicle lease sales tax. Instead, it is being directly appropriated out of the new fund that's created by the House for the Transportation Priorities Fund. And the amount is slightly greater in fiscal 19, 2020 and 2021 on the House side. So this is just noted for illustrative purposes. Then you can see the statutory dedication on line 20 and 2021, and there's a number of places where this appears on the House side. This is where essentially the new fund that is created by the House off of various general fund sales taxes and the allocation from the motor vehicle lease sales tax is directly appropriated in the first 2 years and then statutorily appropriated in the tails. So you see that there's a slight difference there. So you see the direct appropriation on line 49 for the biennium that that the legislature is currently budgeting for FY18 and 19. Then there is a appropriation of $300,000 over the biennium of the House side only for metropolitan area transportation management organizations. Moving to the second page, on there is a House-only provision for a $2 million grant for Safe Routes to School above the $500,000 base for Safe Routes to School. That's a one-time appropriation in fiscal 18 and House-only. Then identical between the House and the Senate, the base for passenger rail at $500,000 a year is eliminated. Moving on to freight. There is a base increase for rail safety of $300,000 on the House side, and that's House only. And then there is a slight difference between House and the Senate where there is some funds from a previous year that was allocated for the Winona and Red Wing ports, which are not able to be spent, and so that is being canceled, and you can see that cancellation on line 83 at the $1.1 million. And then in the House version, $960,000 of that is reappropriated for Winona and Red Wing. And on the Senate side, $1.1 million is appropriated for those two projects. Moving down a few House-only items, this next box lists off some spending for the freight area under the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program. $3.51 million is an appropriation from the general fund into the Mercy Fund, and then an additional one-time appropriation of $1.5 million into the Mercy Fund, and then a spending from the Mercy Fund of $1 million for a rail study in Grand Rapids. Moving down, these are a number of items that are funded out of the Transportation Priorities Fund on the House side. You can see the direct appropriation of $5 million a year for hazardous materials rail safety in the fiscal 18-19 biennium, and then it becomes a statutory appropriation after at about $12.7 million in the tails. Moving on to the next page, there's a $3 million a year appropriation for railroad warning devices, replacement and repair, and this is a House-only provision, and you can see that same effect where it's a direct appropriation in the first biennium and then a statutory appropriation in the tails. Finally, there is a $1 million a year appropriation for rail quiet zones, and again, this is a direct and then statutory appropriation. That's House only. Moving on to state roads, there is a number of different change items here, and I'll run through starting with line 142. This is the base increase for operations and maintenance at $35 million for the House side and $82 million for the Senate side. And then on the House side, there are a number of other change items that increase the base for this program within MnDOT. The first is Governor's recommendation of $20 million for pavement preservation over the biennium, $20 million for road equipment, and then $14.45 million for trunk highway operating cost increases. This is similar to the Governor's recommended level increase, but slightly less. And then on the House side only, there is $8 million of biennium appropriation for intelligent transportation system technology. Moving on to program planning and delivery, and there are some differences in the House and Senate. The House has the base increase at $35.4 million, and the Senate has the base increase at $61.6 million. And then the operating costs, similar to the operations and maintenance, where the House takes the increase at $7.2 million over the biennium, and the Senate does not. Then there is an item on line 156 that would essentially create a new base for a piece of what is currently the program planning and delivery appropriation within MnDOT and establish a new base, and you can see this down on line 165 and 166 for planning and research. So it essentially splits up what is right now the program planning and delivery appropriation, and this is only on the House side, between program delivery and planning and research. And then the final change item on line 157 is a $968,000 appropriation for Red Wing, having to do with costs of Highway 61. And I'll just note on the bottom of this page, on line 166, the base increase for planning and research. So that's in line with the other governor's recommended increases, but slightly less. Moving on to the next page for state road construction, identical between the House and the Senate, is spending federal funds at $361 million over the biennium. And then some differences between the House and the Senate. The House spends $233 million in an increase to the base for state road construction, and the House spends, or the Senate spends $198 million over the biennium as an increase. And these are the results of the general fund sales tax dedications. One other House-only item on line 140 or 184 is $50 million in spending over the biennium for corridors of commerce. Moving down to trunk highway debt service, the House has a debt service to support a $1.3 billion in trunk highway bonding with the cost at $35.8 million. And if Ms. Boyd would like to touch on the Senate bonding amount.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, the amount on the Senate side is $10.9 million from trunk highway for debt service, and that is related to $325 million of new trunk highway bonding authorization in Article 2 of the Senate bill.
And continuing on to local roads, you can see on line 208 on the House side, this is another similar to the Greater Minnesota Transit change. This is showing the statutory change and moving that into the new fund. And then the base increase for the Trunk Highway Fund on the House side at $112 million over the biennium and $105.6 million for the Senate. Moving on to municipal state aid streets, $29.5 million increase on the House side over the biennium and a $32.7 million increase on the Senate side. Moving on to other local road items, and in assembling the spreadsheet, there's a few items where they appeared close, but some of the mechanisms in which they were funding are slightly different, so the items are repeated, but this for the House and the Senate in sort of different places, and noting just on the Senate side on line 226, there's a $10 million one-time appropriation for small cities assistance. And then moving down for metropolitan area roads, these are the five counties in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. That's the direct appropriation on line 236 at $72.7 million over the biennium, and then it becomes a statutory appropriation in the tails. And then the House's Small Cities Assistance Program at $12.5 million a year, so adding up to $25 million over the biennium on line 244, and then becomes statutory there in the tails. Finally, the local bridge program is a House-only item at $24.7 million over the biennium, and then again becoming a statutory appropriation thereafter at about $25.5 million in the tails. Moving on to agency management, there's no change items for the House or the Senate. On tribal training, the House takes a portion of the governor's change item for MnDOT to implement tribal training but only for the first biennium. And that's on line 278. Moving on to MnDOT buildings, the House has a change item to increase the base $17 million over the biennium. The Senate does not have that change item. And then moving on to the Metropolitan Council, the House has a number of reductions starting on line 313. This is a reduction to the Metropolitan Council at $49 million from the general fund appropriation. There's a separate section in the House bill that would require that the county's Transit Improvement Board cover 100% of the light rail operating costs. And so this is, as of calendar year 2017, the $24.5 million is that 50% of the light rail operating costs. And then there's a reduction to the Met Council General Fund appropriation of $52.7 million, and that is related to dollar-per-dollar growth from the motor vehicle sales tax from fiscal 2017. For every forecasted increase, the general fund appropriation was decreased, and that equals to the $52.7 million over the biennium. And then an additional reduction to the Metropolitan Council general fund appropriation of $18 million over the biennium. Then these are all House-only items. And then the final House-only item is on line 316. There's a general fund appropriation, so net. So in a sense, there's a general fund decrease to the Metropolitan Council, but there's a slight negating of that decrease with a city requirement for the Metropolitan Council to do a guideway status report.
Mr. Chair.
A question, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lee, when you're talking about the base reduction on MFEST growth, so was that the forecasted base actually for this current biennium then? I mean, could you just describe a little bit more about this difference in numbers? I mean, that, you know, what was expected by Met Council? You know, the actual base versus what we will be spending.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, the general fund base for the Metropolitan Council is on line 308 at $89.8 million a year. And essentially how the reduction was arrived at to get to the $52 million over the biennium is using the February forecast of funds that the Metropolitan Council was anticipating to receive from the motor vehicle sales tax. For every dollar that grew over the 2017 estimated amount, the fiscal year 2017 estimated amount, the general fund base, that $89.8 million, was reduced correspondingly.
Well, Mr.
Representative
Mr. Chair and Mr. Lee, so the $89 million, is that how much different is that comparing to the 2017 final, you know, year end?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Runbeck, I suppose a difference in the $89 million is the current law base. So enacting the current law amount, the Metropolitan Council would only receive that amount in general fund. However, they, in enacting the current law amount, would also receive essentially growth from the motor vehicle sales tax, which is statutorily appropriated to the council. So the two are a little bit different in that since the $89.8 million is not forecasted, meaning it doesn't grow with the general fund forecast or as relation to the services that the council provides, it's set at a static level where since the motor vehicle sales tax appropriation is statutorily appropriated, it is a percentage of the total receipts of the sales tax, of the motor vehicle sales tax that's appropriated to the council.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead, Mr. Lee.
Finally, there is one item that is similar but slightly different between the House and the Senate and transit, and that is a suburban transit demonstration project that the Senate funds at $1 million from the general fund and the House funds at $1.5 million from the new Transportation Priorities Fund. Moving on to the Department of Public Safety, you can see on line 331 and 332 operational support increases. These are, again, similar but slightly smaller than the governor's recommended changes for the agency for admin and related services. These are House-only positions. Then moving on to the next page, you can see also similar increases for public safety support. And one change that's also on the House-only side decreases the appropriations from the for both the General Fund and the Trunk Highway Fund for this area and splits out three new direct appropriations that you can see starting on line 352 through 373. And this is for peace officer survivor benefits, public safety officer reimbursements, and soft body armor reimbursements. And these are House-only provisions. Then moving on to technology support and services, there are the House-only position increases the base, similar but not quite as much as the governor, on line 379 and 380. Moving on to State Patrol, there's a few House-only items that start on line 379, and that is a $7 million increase. And again, this is similar to the governor's recommended increase relating to salaries and operating costs. And then on line 398 is a $5.7 million one-time appropriation for a State Patrol helicopter, and you can see that's slightly different from the governor's recommendation, which splits it between general fund and trunk highway, and the House position spends only general fund. These are not items that are on the Senate side. Then finally on the House side, there's a line 400, there is a $946,000 over the biennium increase for State Trooper Academy pay increases. On line 410, there's an operational increase for commercial vehicle enforcement, as there's an operational increase for capital security on line 417, and these are House-only positions. And again, a House-only position for operational increase on line 424. Then moving on to driver and vehicle services, there's an operational increase on the House side for vehicle services at $1.7 million over the biennium. This is a House-only position. And then in driver services, there's a identical provision between the House and the Senate of the automated knowledge test system at $312,000 over the biennium. These are all from the Driver and Vehicle Services Special Revenue Fund. And on the House side, $2.9 million for operational increase for driver services. Moving on to the next page, there is spending out of the driver and vehicle services on the House side only for the Minnesota Registration or Licensing and Registration System, or MNLARS, for the first biennium, fiscal 2018 and 2019. This is a House-only provision, and effectively what the House position would do is spend the DVS fund balances to cover that, that program. Moving on to traffic safety, similar to other items, the House has an increase for ongoing operational support at $49,000 over the biennium, and the House also funds the min crash system maintenance at $940,000 over the biennium. These are House-only provisions. And then there's an operational increase in the House side only for pipeline safety. And then, Mr. Chair and members, skipping over the totals and moving to the next page to revenue items.
Sure. And, Mr. Chair, I believe I'll take over and give Mr. Lee a break from all the House-only provisions. On the revenues page, on page 10 of the spreadsheet, the House and the Senate both redirected similar sales taxes that now are funded into the general fund but are funneled slightly different ways, and I'll try to point those out. Starting on line 515 of the spreadsheet, there's a rededication of the existing general sales tax on auto parts right now. That full amount goes into the general fund. So a portion of that is captured, not the full amount, by House and Senate. And you'll see on the next two lines, line 515 shows the reduction to the general fund in both the House and the Senate. That's $307 million in the House and $246 approximately million in the Senate. And then the next two lines are both the Senate and House positions showing where that money ends up. The Senate on line 516 dedicates the money to the Highway User Tax Fund, and the House dedicates it to the newly created Transportation Priorities Fund. So in each instance, you'll see that there's a one-to-one ratio, negative and positive on the House side and then on the Senate side. Similarly, on lines 518 through 520, this is the revenue from the sales, 6.5% general sales tax on rental cars. The full amount of this revenue totals $36.9 million for the biennium. That's 100% of the projected sales tax revenue. And again, the House dedicates that full revenue to the Transportation Priorities Fund, and the Senate dedicates it to the Highway User Tax Fund. On lines 521 through 523, these are revenues from the additional 9.2% tax that is assessed on rental cars, and that amount is $52.3 million approximately in the 18-19 biennium. Again, the Senate dedicates to highway user tax, and the House dedicates the full amount to transportation priorities. The next lines, 524 through 529, deal with the rededication of a portion of the motor vehicle leasing sales tax. Currently, the motor vehicle leasing sales tax, the first $32 million of that tax stays in the general fund, and the remainder is split 50-50 between Greater Minnesota Transit and the five collar metro counties for roads. Both the House and the Senate rededicate that $32 million that right now remains in the general fund, and the House rededicates it fully to the Transportation Priorities Fund. The Senate for further reallocation later, and the Senate dedicates it still to Greater Minnesota Transit and to the five collar counties in roughly the same proportions. In fact, you'll see on lines 526 and 527 that with the new percentages on the total amount that both of these get a slight bump in the biennium and the next biennium. And then additionally on line 528, $10 million of the first year's revenue from the leasing will be dedicated to small cities assistance account for roads in small cities under 5,000 population. And then the remainder of the leasing tax, the total leasing tax in any year, will be dedicated to the Highway User Tax Fund, and you'll see that amount on line 525 on the Senate side. Let's see. Next lines are Senate-only provisions. The Senate bill rededicates a portion of the 5% set aside from the Highway User Tax Fund that the legislature is allowed to, authorized by law to reallocate every 6 years. The last time this was changed was in 2008. So the Senate bill creates a rededication of part of that amount. Roughly half of the 5% set aside right now is deposited in the flexible highway account and used primarily for turnbacks, county and city turnbacks. The Senate bill rededicates that half of the 5% back to the trunk highway fund. So here you're seeing, let's see, on lines 531, or let's start with 532 and 533. You'll see the increase in revenue to the trunk highway fund from this allocation, and on line 533, the decrease to the flexible highway account, which exists in the CASAL fund. And then if you go back up to line 531, this is the portion of the new revenue brought into highway user tax from the rededication of the general sales taxes that will now be redirected to trunk highway instead of flex highway account. I hope that's clear. And then on line 530, the remainder of the 5%, the other roughly half of the 5%, stays as under current law that is dedicated to town roads and town bridges. So this amount on line 530 on the Senate side of about $8.9 million for the biennium just reflects the anticipated new revenue coming into highway user tax that will flow through to these accounts based on the new general sales tax rededications to highway user tax. The next, you want to talk about 534?
Yes. 534 is a House-only provision, and this is levies a fee on electric vehicles dedicated to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and the revenue note estimates that it would be $40,000 over the biennium.
The next two lines, 535 and 536, are a House-only provision. These are one-time transfers from the newly created Transportation Priorities Fund to the Highway User Tax Fund of about $345 million in 18-19 only. The next four lines on the House and Senate side have different amounts. These are basically accounting lines for the spreadsheet. Because the Highway User Tax Fund is a pass-through fund, and then any revenues deposited in the Highway User Tax Fund are allocated by constitutional dedication to the Trunk Highway Fund, the County State Aid Highway Fund, and the Municipal State Aid Street Fund. So any amounts deposited in highway user tax in either the Senate or House bill have to be accounted for to pass through to those funds. So 537 through 540 just shows those transfers among the funds. Line 544 is a House-only provision. I'll let Mr. Lee explain that one.
Mr. Chair and members, line 545 is a change that is similar to a governor's recommended change item that would reallocate dollars that are currently going to Greater Minnesota Transit and the five suburban or metropolitan counties as a result of the motor vehicle lease sales tax. In a sense, the amount of that tax that is paying the legacy is being borne currently by the general fund. And so what the change item would do is reallocate that back to the general fund and reduce the amount to the two transportation funds. And the House is picking up that item, but since the House is capturing both the motor vehicle lease sales tax transportation funds and that portion of the general fund, it essentially nets out within the House transportation bill allocation.
On line 550, unfortunately, I believe I've just found a glaring mistake on the House side that somehow Mr. Lee and I both missed, and that this should not be a Senate-only provision. This is a recognition of anticipated federal highway money from the FAST Act. It's in the governor's recs, and it should be on the Senate and the House side. And, in fact, these amounts are appropriated in both the House and Senate side earlier in state road construction in the spreadsheet. So that's a mistake, and we'll correct that as we move on. Line 551 is the recognition of the port development carry forward, that a portion of the port development appropriation was canceled in 17 in both the House and Senate side. That is picked up. That's recognized as quote-unquote revenue, unanticipated revenue in fiscal year 18, and then is reappropriated. So that's what that line is explaining. And the last two are house-only provisions.
Mr. Chair and members, line 552 is an appropriation to the county state aid highway fund as a result of overweight truck permits at $980,000 over the biennium, and that's a policy provision in the House transportation bill. And then the next item, 553, is a reduction in anticipated revenue to the Transportation Priorities Fund, which becomes in which what was formerly the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Fund is within, and that is a loan forgiveness for a railroad at the $4.13 million.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll just take these last three items. I believe that's the end of our change items. Are on line, oh, no, there's one more in the House on the next page. But on lines 560 and 561 is a provision in both the House and Senate bill. Currently, when you get a two-wheel vehicle endorsement on your license, there's a fee, and part of that fee goes to the general fund, and the rest, well, part of that fee goes to the general fund. It's about $17,000 a year, and both the Senate and House provisions redirect that to the Motorcycle Safety Fund. So that's what that reduction to the general fund and increase to the special revenue fund is. Line 562 is, again, a provision in both House and Senate establishing special license plates for Start Seeing motorcycles. And in addition to the plate fee, to acquire a special plate, you must contribute an amount, I believe, annually to the Motorcycle Safety Fund, and that anticipated revenue is $12,000 for the biennium on both the House and Senate.
Mr. Chair and members, moving on to a House-only item on the top of the page 11. In the tails, there is a reallocation of the motor vehicle transfer fee that currently goes to the Environmental Fund and would then go into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund under the House side. There's a House-only provision. Mr. Chair, I'll make one other note. You can see that the revenue items totals are quite a bit different between the House and the Senate. This is partly a result of totaling within the table, but also as a result of major pieces of the House tax provisions being carried in a separate bill. And while it's on the spreadsheet for illustrative purposes, it doesn't necessarily add to the total. So in the grand totals at the bottom of the general fund cost, you can see that on the House side, on line 607, the House total is $136.6 million for the biennium, and the Senate total is $643.5 million for the biennium. And again, that's because the House position includes only the essentially the transportation base spending, and about $450 million is carried in the tax in the House tax bill.
Thank you. Thanks to both of you for stepping through the spreadsheet. I do not see any other questions at this time. I know there will be other questions down the road, but thank you for stepping through this with us. At this time, we will move to the language side. Testifiers table, Ms. Stengel and Mr. Burris. We are not going to be able to go through this language in detail today. There's just not an adequate time for that, but we would like to kind of step through and get an overall idea of the language and the language differences within the two bills, and I know that you are both very capable of doing that, so why don't you go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, again, Matt Burris with House Research, and I will lead off. I'll start with a couple of introductory comments. In your packets, you should have several documents, and One is the side-by-side, and this looks like this, and it's the language showing both the House and Senate provisions. It's actually broken up into several parts in creating this document. The House language is going to be on the left side, and in general it will be in order, section number order. There are a couple of variations on that. The Senate language will be on the right side. In some of the parts of the document, there's a merger of multiple Senate articles, so you'll see section numbering that looks like it's repeating or out of order, and that has to do with lining up the House and Senate language as well as merging multiple articles that would have in the same section number but in a different article, just that you're aware of that. And the other thing is, as a result of the multiple side-by-side documents, the reference to the page numbers, the R that's at the bottom of each of those side-by-sides, can also repeat in some cases. And then finally, the side-by-side language does include some of the House File 4 tax-related provisions that were carried in the tax bill as part of the overall transportation finance package. And then also in your packet, you should see a side-by-side comparison or a comparison summary that looks like this. It's a textual summary of the side-by-side language, and that's what we'll be walking through. This, again, has the House language on the left side and the Senate language on the right side. The spreadsheet largely went, the walkthrough of the spreadsheet really covered quite a bit of the appropriations. There are some other riders and provisions farther in the detail, but in the interest of providing that general overview, we'll start on page 4 of the side-by-side or comparison summary document. And this is House Article 2, Senate Article 2. This is the bonding language. So this creates the bonding authorization and appropriates trunk highway bonds. As was mentioned, the House language has a total of $1.3 billion in bonding authorized. This is broken up to a couple of different purposes. One is a fiscal year 18 appropriation of $215 million for the Corridors of Commerce program. The language also specifies some project selection criteria that goes along with use of those dollars. And then there are two state road construction appropriations, again, of bond proceeds on the House side. And that totals a little bit over $1 billion, and both those are for the general state road construction program. The reason that's split between two different appropriations has to do with a debt service transfer mechanism that we'll get into a little bit later.
On the Senate side for this portion, the Senate does bonding in $50 million each year for the next 4 years for the Corridors of Commerce program. And then sections 4, 5, and 6 on the Senate side are Senate-only provisions, and these are for specific projects on Highway 14 to 12. We have the numbering wrong in there. 12 to 12 and 14. And then the next section in both the House and Senate are provisions relating to bond sale expenses.
And then, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the final sections are on authorizing the bond sale and an effective date. And that's, with technical differences, essentially the same between House and Senate. The next articles are representing House File 4 on the House side, and then Senate Article 3, and this gets largely at taxes and some transportation finance provisions.
Section 1 of this article on the Senate side is the Senate-only provision, and it redistributes the 5% set aside, so the Flex Highway account money will now be going into the HUTDF.
And then on the House side, House-only provisions for sections 1, 2, and 3, and this is creating the surcharge of $75 on all electric vehicles that was mentioned earlier. And then section 2 on the House side is, and it's also section 2 on the Senate side, has the language changes related to the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue reallocation. And as was mentioned earlier, there's some differences in how that reallocation is structured, along with the legacy amendment revenue. And then the Section 3 on both House and Senate is the language of reallocating the various current general fund dollars from sales taxes. So this includes the rental sales tax, general sales tax that's attributed to rentals, and a portion of the general sales tax that's attributed to motor vehicle repair and replacement parts.
On the Senate side, Section 4 is a Senate-only provision. This provision allows any of the counties that are currently in CTIB to impose an additional 0.5% sales tax for transit for transportation purposes, and it must be approved by the voters before it's imposed.
And then Section 4 is a House-only provision that directs the county's Transit Improvement Board, CTIB, to cover the operating costs of light rail transit. That works in conjunction with a later section, which is on page 7, that's Section 8, that also has a similar requirement for counties that are former CTIB members. So between any counties that withdraw from CTIB and counties remaining in CTIB, 100% of LRT operating costs would need to be covered from those two sales tax streams. That second sales tax stream is the statewide local option transportation sales tax. And then there are a couple other provisions also on that statewide transportation sales tax that are House-only provisions. Section 5 has a conforming clarification. The substantive change is on Section 6, and this is a requirement for former CTIB counties to go through voter approval, have a referendum, if the rate of the proposed sales tax is above 0.25%. So 0.25% is what the rate is for the CTIB transit sales tax. Currently, the statewide transportation sales tax is optionally up to 0.5% rate. So if a higher rate was desired by former CTIB counties, this would require voter approval. There's also on the House side a limitation on use of some of the funds, as well as some clarifications related to regional railroad authority levies and how those dollars can be used. That's Sections 9 and 10, again, House-only language. And then Section 11 is also House-only and is a report that the Department of Revenue would be required to produce, estimating the actual or more farther down the road, the sales tax revenue that is related to auto parts. And then finally, there's a repealer in Section 12 that's House only, and that removes a provision requiring that the CTIB sales tax supplements and doesn't supplant operating and capital assistance that comes from state dollars. The next piece then is House Article 3, Senate Articles 4 to 6, and this is various policy and finance provisions. The first of these is a House-only provision establishing that from motor vehicle sales tax funds that goes to the Met Council, the first dollars would need to fund Metro Mobility. So it's a shift in what would be required in their budgeting structure for that. The second, Section 2, is also a House-only provision, and this is both a move of language from an area of law on vehicle sales financing to go into the transportation statutes. And later on, the corresponding language is substantively reproduced. This is around the maximum document fee that dealers charge or can charge as part of a vehicle sale. The language that's reproduced later raises that maximum fee. It's capped in current law at $75. So we'll be sort of circling back around to that in a subsequent section.
Section 1 on the Senate side starts a series of sections that I will, for shorthand, refer to as the bicycle provisions. There was the bill that we heard is an agency bill And it includes consolidating and updating several sections of law and moving some of the current rule language into existing statute around the use of shared bikeways, shared paths, those sorts of things, as well as the commissioner's powers and duties as it relates to designating model policies on bike paths. And that's the first of those provisions.
And then Section 3 on the House side is a House-only provision. This is a piece of the redirection of a $10 fee on vehicle registration title transfers that would go into the new fund that is being created in the House language.
Section 2 on the Senate side has to do with the Volkswagen settlement funds that are being set aside due to a federal lawsuit. And this provision says that the money is put into a specified account and can't be spent until it's appropriated.
And then Section 4, both Section 4 on House and Senate side, establishes some additional funds or fees and awards that have to be provided as part of the eminent domain process if it is eminent domain related to light rail transit or bus rapid transit. There's a difference between the House and Senate on one aspect of that.
On the Senate side, Sections 3, 4, and 5 are all those bicycle provisions, providing definitions and making conforming changes.
And then Section 5 is House only and has MnDOT create a process that wouldn't be through rulemaking, but would be procedural for when driveway access permits are denied. And it lays out some of the requirements around that process.
On the Senate side, starting with Section 6, we have a whole string of the bicycle provisions relating to Section 6. It has to do with the powers of the commissioner. Section 7 is about cooperating with other entities. Section 8 is about bridges for bikes and peds. Section 9 is a definition. Section 10 talks about bike routes. Section 11 talks about connecting bikeways. Section 12 is cooperating with other entities. Section 13 is funding, and Sections 14 and 15 are specific bike routes. One is established in statute and is being moved, and the other is a new trail.
And then Section 6 on the House side makes a modification to the formula within the flexible highway account, and it sets a set percentage instead of a calculation, and this is based on language that was part of one of the agency bills. And then Section 7 on the House side is related to the Corridors of Commerce program, and that same section is also being amended in the Senate, but really the topic and focus is fairly different between House and Senate. The House language makes a modification to the eligibility requirements around project readiness.
And on the Senate side, that's Section 16. It sets the eligibility criteria and statute so the commissioner doesn't have as much flexibility.
And then Section 8 also, as part of Corridors of Commerce, on the House side has a clarification of the requirements when a stakeholder group submits a candidate project to the program, directing MnDOT to ensure that if it's eligible, any of those candidate projects have to be evaluated. And there's also some technical changes.
The corresponding Senate section here sets, again, it refers to the criteria set in statute and tells the commissioner that the process established by the department must be consistent with the statute and they cannot add additional selection criteria. The commissioner must adopt a policy that basically weights the different criteria and assigns ranks to each of the projects, and then the complete project list must be made public. Section 18 is a Senate-only provision, and this requires a Corridors of Commerce long-term plan, which is similar to the STIP.
And then Section 9 on the House side adds to the legislative report requirements around the Corridors of Commerce program and makes some changes to the reporting cycle.
On the Senate side, the report is updated to reflect the changes that were made in the previous sections.
And then Section 10 on the Senate side, Section 20, or sorry, Section 10 on the House side, Section 20 on the Senate side makes a conforming change. This is part of a agency lands bill, and this is related to one of the proposed turnbacks. Section 11 on the House side establishes a memorial highway. That's House only.
Section 21 on the Senate side designates part of Highway 52 in Dakota County as the Senator Jim Metzen Memorial Highway.
And then on the House side, there's Sections 12 and 13 that also establish memorial stretches of the state highway system. Trunk Highway 23 is a portion of that is the Kenneth L. Olson Highway, and then a bridge over U.S. Highway 52 is designated as the Corporal Benjamin S. Kopp Bridge.
Section 22 on the Senate side is Senate only, and this is another conforming change with those bicycle provisions.
And then Section 14 on the House side, Section 23 on the Senate side, comes from a MnDOT agency housekeeping bill that would, and it would remove a bid preference eligibility cutoff for a couple of the preference programs. It's the same language between the House and Senate. And then Section 15 is House-only language, and this is a new requirement on tracking some of the spending that local units of government do in work on the trunk highway system. Section 16 on the House and Section 24 on the Senate is the first of a couple of MnDOT agency lands bill provisions, and this relates to the conveyance process when there's excess lands. So it authorizes MnDOT to sell land following some procedures. Similarly, Sections 17 and 18 deal with the land sale process. That's 17, 18 House side, 25, 26 Senate side. The language is substantially the same between House and Senate on those. Section 19 shifts the small cities assistant program account to be within the new fund that's being created in the House language.
Section 1 on the Senate side states that only one filing fee may be charged for a three-year trailer registration. Under current law, that filing fee is multiplied by 3.
And then Sections 20 to 22 on the House language and Sections 2 to 4 on the Senate language are part of, there are a couple other sections, but this is part of creating a disability plate for mopeds, or what are called motorized bicycles in statutory language. Largely, the language is the same between House and Senate. There is one difference in there. And then Section 23 is House only. This creates one of a couple of special plates that are authorized in the finance omnibus. This special plate is for retired law enforcement, and the language is fairly standard compared to current law special plates, as is the case with the next couple of special plates being created. So eligibility, plate design, transfers are kind of some of the provisions within that. And then Section 25 in the House language, Section 6 in the Senate language establishes the special start seeing motorcycle plates. It was referenced earlier during the spreadsheet walkthrough. That has some technical differences, but is similar between House and Senate. And then Section 26 is the recreation of the vehicle dealer document fee, and this has the increased amount maximum to 150. That's House only. Section 27 is also a House only provision and allows for electronic storage of motor vehicle records by deputy registrars. There's a similar provision for driver's license agents later. And then Section 28 on the House side, Section 7 on the Senate side, allows deputy registrars to be able to issue certificates of title that are duplicates. And there is a policy difference between the House and Senate on a delayed effective date and a requirement of the department to permit this process.
Section 8 on the Senate side establishes a transfer on death title to a motor vehicle that would be an automatic transfer once the owner dies to the designated designee. Sections 9, 10, and 11 all have to do with manufactured homes and the titling process. Section 9 makes changes to the titling process when the manufactured home is actually affixed to real property. Section 10 has to do with the manufactured homes when they are unaffixed from real property. And Section 11 creates a new process for resolving situations where ownership of a manufactured home is at issue or is unclear.
And then Section 29 on the House side is the first of a couple of Department of Public Safety proposals around school bus regulations. This one makes a couple of modifications related to what counts or what's included as a Head Start bus and some scenarios on what color the Head Start bus can be painted.
Section 27 on the Senate side lowers the speed limit from 45 miles an hour to 40 miles an hour on a St. Louis County road.
And then Section 30 on the House side creates an exception for moving left of the center in no passing zones to allow for passing bicycles.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Osmek.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to go back for just one second to Time's Section up. 27. This is actually brought to us by Representative Rup Gavina. This was originally his idea, but Senator Tomasoni ganged on top of it with a certain special naming convention, just to let our friends on the other side know.
Thank you, Senator. The Senate Chair would like us to move on.
Senator Bach had a little bit of that. Awesome.
Moving on. Section 31 is another House-only provision, and it allows for school buses to stop in bikeways when loading and unloading students. And then Sections 32 and 33 are conforming changes related to the moped disability plates. Section 34 is the first of a series of sections that will come up again a little bit later on school bus equipment standards modifications. The change in this section relates to flashing strobe lamps on school buses and Head Start buses. Oh, and then House only again on Section 35. This allows for stopping to unload students or load students in designated right turn lanes. So that's some conditions when that can occur as part of pupil transportation. And then Section 36 is also a House-only provision that increases a fine on passing stopped school buses when it's activated its stop system or the warning system. And the fine increases from $300 to $500. And then Section 37 is also House-only and is, again, part of a Department of Public Safety school bus set of initiatives, and this is removes a requirement on including the administrative rules in as part of contracts with private bus operators. And then Sections 38 through 45 amend standards for motor vehicle equipment for school buses. And the essence of it is to adopt the latest standards that are established by a national organization, 2015, which is updated from what's in statute now is 2010 standards. The way it's structured is those standards are largely adopted in state law, and then there are a number of different modifications that are also in statute that effectively override the national standards. And so the series of sections adopt the 2015 standards, set those as being for buses manufactured in the future, and then make a few different changes related to school bus equipment around things like plywood covering, insulation, windows, surveillance systems, and strobe lamps.
Sections 28 and 29 on the Senate side create a weight limit exemption for emergency vehicles.
And Section 46 on the House side creates a weight limit increase. It's a 10% increase for some situations of transporting fluid milk in straight trucks. Section 47 on the House side, Section 30 on the Senate side, allows for operation of special vehicles with six or seven axles that are operated on a special permit issued by MnDOT to be able to go on the interstate system. Section 48 is would create a new special permit for hauling construction materials, and it's similar to the current law special ag permit, so it would be for six and seven axle vehicles. The language sets out what the requirements are around the permit, sets fees, allocates the revenue. And then Section 49 is another piece of the Department of Public Safety school bus regulations, and this would modify the requirements of a Type 3 vehicle driver to notify their employer immediately following loss of driving privileges. And then Section 50 is tied to the special license plate that is being proposed for Start Seeing Motorcycles, and this is the fee allocation of additional revenue that currently goes into the general fund to instead go into the motorcycle safety fund. The language is same between House and Senate. That's the Senate Section 14. Section 51 is a House-only provision, and this is the driver's license agent version of the electronic storage provision. And then Section 52 has some components that are the same between House and Senate, and then an additional provision that's just on the Senate side. The part that's the same between House and Senate is to prevent some speeding violations that wouldn't go on a driver's record, to prevent that provision from kicking in for commercial learner's permit holders, so that those violations would go on the record of a commercial learner's permit holder.
It's Section 31 there on the Senate side. The Senate adds a provision that a speeding violation for less than 10 miles an hour over on 35E in St. Paul is not kept on a driver's record.
And then Sections 53 running through Section 68 are a MnDOT initiative on outdoor advertising. There's a number of different updates to the chapter of statutes related to control of advertising signs that are visible from trunk highways. And there are a couple of different provisions within that, including preventing some local zoning and local permits under some circumstances, some additional definitions of terms, some modification to MnDOT's authority, additional regulations around changeable electronic variable message signs, so the digital signs, and some provisions on removal and maintenance of outdoor advertising that runs through Section 68. And then Section 69 on the House side, Section 32 on the Senate side revises the update cycle for the statewide multimodal transportation plan. Section 70 House side and Section 33 with the Senate language also has a revision cycle for the MNCHIP, the State Highway Investment Plan. And both those revisions are from agency housekeeping initiatives and are same or similar with technical differences between House and Senate. And then a House-only provision is in Section 61, and this requires MnDOT to develop a project selection process around expansion projects and major projects. So there's a little bit of a connection between this and what was discussed earlier on a planning requirement that Senate-only language for corridors of commerce. So this House language is broader and addresses all types of specialty programs.
Section 34 on the Senate side creates an active transportation program within the Department of Transportation to provide grants to local governments and nonprofits to support bike and ped transportation issues. And it's funded by bond proceeds and some federal funds that we've received.
And then sections 72 to 74 make technical and clarifying changes that really go to section 75. That's where the substantive change is. The technical and clarifying have to do with establishing that the various statutory processes and criteria around the local bridge replacement rehabilitation program apply to all the different types of grants that can be issued under that program. There are a couple of different kind of grant categories. And then the change in the House language is to set a cap of $7 million on grants under that program, and there are some scenarios in which that a grant for a higher amount can be provided for a local bridge. And then Section 76 is a House-only provision. This is the creation of the Transportation Priorities Fund. So the language creates the fund. It sets some additional reporting detail. It also sets up an allocation formula for the TAILs. So after fiscal years 18 and 19, the base appropriations would be set based on the percentages that are established in the fund. There's also a debt service transfer provision that's part of this language, and it's a transfer out of this new fund that would cover a portion of the trunk highway bonding debt service. And this goes back to the trunk highway bonding appropriations being split into two different SRC state road construction pots. One of those is in effect backed by the funding stream under this transfer. And as you may recall, this fund is the repository or the initial repository of the reallocated general sales tax dollars. And then finally, there's a fund allocation provision for the dollars that are allocated among the five counties in the metropolitan area. This is essentially the same language that's currently in the motor vehicle lease sales tax allocation section. So it's moved and revised a bit to be within the fund language. And then Section 77 is also a House-only provision and deals with reporting along with Section 78. That MnDOT is required to do annually on major highway projects, and it updates that legislative report and requires some additional information to be contained in the report. Section 79 also goes along with the major highway projects report and sets a requirement that that same information be provided on the Department of Transportation's website. Section 80 is also a House-only provision. This creates a contingent appropriation for snow and ice if a couple of criteria are met in snow and ice expenditures exceeding what the department had anticipated. This is based on the executive branch budget proposal with some modifications. Section 81 is also a House-only provision, and this modifies a legislative report on transit in the Twin Cities metro area, and it expands the reporting requirements in a couple of different ways, makes it annual, makes the Met Council the lead in creating it, adds some definitions, adds busways so that it's beyond just guideway-related information, which is the current report. It also requires more comprehensive financial information on transit finance in the metro area. And then Section 101 on the House side corresponds to a couple of sections on the Senate side. This is one of the cases where the House language is reordered to line up with the Senate. There are some differences between the House and Senate on these provisions. On the House side, it's a requirement that MnDOT develop some best practices around the selection process for highways and has a legislative reporting requirement.
The Senate, corresponding Senate sections are Section 35 and Section 44. The Senate provisions earlier that we discussed relating to corridors of commerce, govern corridors of commerce, and on this particular provision, Section 35 and 44, have to do with the standard selection process only. The commissioner must adopt a project evaluation and selection policy that ranks projects by using weighted criteria, and then a report is required back to the legislature.
And then, Mr. Chair and members, Section 82 is another House-only provision, and this is the programmatic language that goes along with one of the appropriations that was touched on earlier for hazardous materials, rail safety, and the language sets up the program, identifies how the funds can be used, who the eligible recipients of grants are, what the criteria are for developing grants. Similarly, Section 83 creates a program for rail, highway rail grade crossing quiet zones. That's also House only. And then Section 84 requires railroads to install yield signs under some situations, and that comes from an agency initiative. And I might note that as well, backing up to Sections 82 and 83, these programs are proposed in the governor's bonding bill. The House language has some modifications to that original proposal. Section 85 on the House side, and I might note an update to the section numbering for the Senate language. That should be Section 36. This is the same between House and Senate and sets up an exemption from carrier regulations for pipeline welding trucks. Section 86 is a House-only provision related to the Mercy program, and this allows for administrative costs coming out of that Mercy account, and also moves the account to be within the new Transportation Priorities Fund. Section 87 is a change to the grant-making authority and an update to some of the language. For the most part, these two sections reflect a MnDOT agency initiative. Section 88 is another House-only provision, and this creates a new grant category within the Mercy program, and it's oriented to Class 2 and Class 3 railroads who experience low rail service, and the grants would be for capital improvements and rehabilitation.
The next two sections are Senate-only provisions, Sections 15 and 16. Both make changes related to the transfer on death title that was created earlier in the bill.
And then Section 89 is a House-only provision that would change the salary caps for trainees in the state, going into the State Patrol program. So it would set a minimum of 70% instead of a 70% cap. And that percentage is in comparison to the basic salary for State Patrol troopers. And then there's also corresponding rider language in the House language around the as part of the appropriation to the State Patrol that's also related to this training program. Sections 90 and 91, and there's another section later, are House-only provisions that require legislative approval for light rail transit projects. Section 90 has this requirement for regional rail authorities. Section 91 is for counties and cities. Section 92 is House-only, and this amends a couple of aspects of the budgeting process for the Metropolitan Council, including that the council would have to set its general fund, anticipated general fund, as matching what the base is in the transportation budget enacted by the legislature. Section 93 is also House only and sets a fare box recovery goal of 40% by 2022 for the Metropolitan Council.
Sorry. Section 2 on the Senate side allows for cities and towns in the metropolitan area to apply to have their bus service provided by an opt-out provider instead of the Met Council.
And Section 94 modifies the formula that's used as allocating both the total amount and among the opt-outs, the replacement service providers. And there's some technical changes to the formula as well as a minimum amount increase as a percentage of the motor vehicle sales tax funds. Section 95 is also House only, and this prevents the Metropolitan Council from using certificates of participation or other forms of obligation in if the backing is through motor vehicle sales tax revenue. Section 96 is another piece of the legislative approval, and this is for the Met Council or potentially MnDOT if MnDOT were set as the lead entity, responsible entity on developing a light rail transit project in the Twin Cities metro area. Section 97 establishes some additional requirements on the light rail transit development process related to when light rail transit is co-located in the same corridor as freight rail. This is House only. And then Section 98 is also related to the light rail development process for the development process for light rail transit projects. And this sets requirements around a alternatives and benefits analysis that would need to be undertaken as one of the preliminary steps in the project development process. And then the next piece has language that's a somewhat different approach and different policy between the House and Senate. On the House side, there's a repealer of a provision that sets a 50% operating amount for state funds for light rail transit. That's repealed in the House language. And as was discussed previously, there's also a light rail transit operating cost requirement for CTIB or any former CTIB counties.
Section 3 on the Senate side does not repeal the statute, but instead makes some changes. So the bill limits the existing authority or the existing requirement that the state pay for 50% of light rail operating costs to those lines that are in operation at the time of the bill's enactment, or if after the bill is enacted, that there is a specific appropriation from a state fund for that line.
And then Section 99 is another House-only provision, and this would prevent both the Met Council and other units of government, local units of government, from identifying any state share for the capital costs of a light rail transit project unless that state share has been somehow identified through legislation. Section 100 is a House-only provision that relates to freight and light rail transit co-location. And it sets a liability limit of freight rail operators under some circumstances within a corridor where light rail transit and freight rail are co-located, and there's an operating agreement between the freight rail operator and some sort of agreement and the light rail transit operator. Section 102 is another House-only provision, and this sets a segment of U.S. Highway 212 as explicitly eligible for project consideration in the Corridors of Commerce program next time that program is funded. Section 103 on the House side and Section 17 on the Senate side provide authority to a driver's license agent in the city of New Brighton to be a full-service agent instead of just providing some driver licensing services. Section 104 on the House side is a requirement of the Metropolitan Council to revise its transportation policy plan. This goes along with the fare box recovery increase requirements that was touched on a little bit earlier. So it would have the effect of having the council get that requirement into its planning sooner. Section 105 is a House-only provision, and this also relates to light rail transit, and it actually connects back to a couple of project development requirements that were outlined earlier around co-location and alternatives and benefits and analysis. And it has the effect of directing the Met Council to go through those co-location, meet those co-location requirements, go through the project development steps for current light rail transit lines. So it would apply those to Southwest and Botineau. And then also on the House side, Section 106 is another piece of the Deputy Registrar and Driver's License Agent's electronic storage. This is a directive to the Department of Public Safety to develop standards related to that electronic storage. And Section 107 is a directive to the Department of Public Safety on amending its rules. This would be to conform with the school bus stop change being made earlier in the bill in right turn lanes. And then Section 108 directs MnDOT to convey a parcel of land that is in the Pine County town of Wilma. That's it specifies the conveyance amount of $100. Section 109 on the House language, Section 38 in the Senate language is also a conveyance, and this would allow MnDOT to convey a parcel of land in Cochinchina County that would go to the Minnesota Historical Society. There's the same language between House and Senate, and this is one of the pieces of a MnDOT lands initiative. Section 111 is a House provision that would direct MnDOT to implement efficiencies to achieve a 15% threshold based on the increased funds to the Trunk Highway Fund, and that would be for fiscal years 18 and 19. Section 112 in the House language, also that might be the wrong section number on the Senate language, sorry about that. This relates to a prohibition on MnDOT to change a speed limit on a section of Trunk Highway 316, and there's a legislative report that's required. There's a little bit of a difference between House and Senate on the focus of the reporting, safety issues versus focusing on speed limits. Section 43 is a House-only provision, and this is a moratorium for until February 1, 2018. This is on constructing a southbound way station at a location near the 35W-35E split in the northern part of the Twin Cities metropolitan area. Section 14 is a directive to MnDOT to complete a study on deficient bridges where fluid milk is transported. This goes along with the 10% weight limit increase for transport of milk that is authorized earlier in the House language. Section 115 is also a House-only provision, and this directs MnDOT to do a study of congestion and safety on a segment of Trunk Highway 65 in the Blaine-Ham Lake area. Section 116 on House language, Section 40 on the Senate language, is a study required of MnDOT on the interchange at 94, 694, and 494, and this is in the Woodbury-Oakdale area, with a report due back. The House and Senate language is similar with some technical differences. Section 117 in the House language and Section 39 in the Senate language require a study of construction costs and cost inflation, and that is a couple of different elements of that study are required. There's some difference between House and Senate on the specification of details, particularly around the benchmarks and state-by-state comparison. That legislative report is due February 15th, 2018. And then there's also a difference in the Senate on an additional reporting component. Section 118 on the House side, Section 5 on the Senate side is a study that's required for the Met Council to undertake through contracting with an engineering group.
Yeah.
That would be to look at vibration in the Calhoun Isles property. This would be part of the route for the proposed Southwest light rail transit line. And that, by the way, is both House and Senate language with just some technical differences. Section 119 is a House-only provision requiring MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety to update a legislative report on expenditures out of dedicated funds. So this would add the latest couple of years to a one-time report that had been required previously. Sections 120 and 121 are turnback provisions that would authorize county turnbacks to counties once there's agreement between MnDOT and each county. That's sections 41 and 42 on the Senate side. The language is the same between House and Senate on those.
Then we come to a series of Senate-only sections. Senate Section 37 requires the Advisory Committee on Non-Motorized Transportation to report back to the legislature with recommendations relating to the active transportation program that's established earlier in the bill. Section 45 requires Commissioner of Transportation to report back to the legislature on the potential uses, on the use and costs of MnPass lanes. Section 46 requires the Commissioner to report back to the legislature on potential uses of tolling. Section 47 requires a twofold report from the Commissioner of Transportation. The first part is a look back over the past 5 years on turnbacks, and then a report going forward on turnbacks. Section 48 has to do with a specific intersection at Highway 55 and Wilkin County Road 19, and it requires stakeholders to get together and try to come up with a solution to this dangerous intersection. And if there is not a solution, then the department must either install a turn lane or a stoplight at the intersection. Section 4 establishes a Metro Mobility Enhancement Task Force that looks at using transportation network companies or taxi services to increase program service levels and efficiency.
And then Section 122 on the House side moves a couple of sections. So it's a recodification. One's related to the vehicle and title fee that's being shifted over in the tails and the out years. The other relates to the comprehensive transit report with the Met Council as the lead entity. It's moved, that language is moved into the Met Council's chapter. Section 123 in the House language and part of the repealer in the Section 49 Senate language removes a statutory route that's duplicative and that's listed in statute describing part of the trunk highway system. And then Section 124 in the Senate language, or sorry, House language, has a couple other repealers. One of the repealers relates to the school bus-related standards, and deals with school bus batteries. There's also the repealer that was mentioned earlier on the 50% of light rail transit operating costs coming from state sources. And then finally, the House language has a repealer that's part of the MnDOT agency initiative on outdoor advertising.
And finally, to wrap up, the remainder of Senate Section 49 repeal statutes and rules relating to the bicycle provisions we just spoke about earlier.
And that, Mr. Chair, concludes the walkthrough. We're happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you both for your testimony and your work. I don't see any questions at this time. I would just kind of review a few things as to what we're up to next. We have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow at 2:30 or the call of the chair. The chair, of course, will switch to the Senate tomorrow. That meeting will be here in room 120. This year we are switching the gavel every meeting, I understand, which So if we have more than one meeting in a day, we could see the gavel switching during a given day. We are going to be taking public testimony at that meeting tomorrow, but testifiers must be on the list. So please contact either House or Senate staff to make sure that you are listed. If you want to testify tomorrow, we're having a two-minute limit per testifier with the exception of the commissioners. I believe that's all I have at this time. Senator Newman, any other questions? Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned.